All right, let's dive in. We've got this really interesting paper to unpack today.
Yeah, looking forward to it.
It's all about, well, the evolution of IBM's quantum computers, right?
Exactly.
It's called IBM Quantum Computers: Evolution, Performance, and Future Directions. And the cool thing is, it was just published, like last month.
October 3rd, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, October 3rd, 2024.
Yeah.
So it's really hot off the press.
Fresh insights.
Super fresh. And, you know, one of the things that really caught my eye, just skimming through it, was that IBM just broke the 1,000 qubit barrier.
Oh, yeah, that Condor processor. Pretty remarkable.
Yeah, Condor. It's like we're living in the future, right?
It does feel that way sometimes.
So I guess before we get too deep into the specifics of the paper, maybe it's worth taking a step back for a sec.
Sure.
You know, for folks that might not be as familiar with quantum computers, what makes them so different from the computers like we use every day?
Okay, so at the most basic level, you've got classical computers, the ones we're all used to.
Right.
They use bits, which are like a switch, either on or off, zero or one.
Got it.
But quantum computers, they use these things called qubits,
Well, qubits.
and they can be in this weird state called superposition.
Superposition. Okay, now you're losing me a little.
It's kind of like imagine a coin that can be both heads and tails at the same time.
Whoa, okay, that's trippy.
It is, and that's what gives quantum computers their power, because they can explore many possibilities simultaneously.
So, way more powerful than our regular computers.
Potentially, yes. For certain types of problems, they could be exponentially faster.
Okay, that makes sense. So, where does IBM fit into all of this? Because it seems like they're making big strides in this whole quantum computing race.
Oh, absolutely. They've been pioneers in the field. This paper actually traces their journey starting way back in 2017 with their five-qubit processor.
Oh, right, Canary, wasn't it?
Canary, exactly.
And they had Falcon, Hummingbird, Eagle, Osprey. It's like a whole bird theme going on.
Yeah, it's pretty cool how they've stuck with that.
I kind of dig it. But I'm curious, what were some of the key innovations, you know, that allowed them to build these increasingly powerful processors?
Well, each generation kind of built upon the previous one.
Okay, so it's like a constant evolution.
Totally. For example, Falcon in 2019, they introduced this heavy hexagonal qubit layout.
Heavy hexagonal. Sounds fancy.
It basically helped optimize the interactions between the qubits, a big step towards larger, more interconnected systems.
So it wasn't just about adding more qubits, it was about making them work better together.
Precisely.
Got it. All right, so then what happened? Where did they go from there?
Well, then came Hummingbird in 2020.
Hummingbird, right. I remember that one.
Over 60 qubits, and they introduced this new architecture that reduced the complexity of the wiring.
Ah, so easier to scale up.
Exactly. And then Eagle in 2021. This one was a big deal. 127 qubits, and it had this groundbreaking three-dimensional architecture, really efficient qubit connections, and fewer
Well,
errors.
they were getting serious about building practical quantum computers at that point.
Oh, for sure. Eagle was a major milestone. And then they just kept going.
Osprey.
Yep. 2022, 433 qubits.
433. I mean, wow. That's a lot of qubits.
It is. You know, just to try to represent a single state of Osprey using classical bits, you'd need more bits than there are atoms in the observable universe.
Wait, really?
Yeah, it's kind of mind-blowing.
That's insane. But I guess at some point they must have hit some kind of limit with just adding more and more qubits.
You're right. It's not just about the quantity, it's about the quality too.
Right, making them work reliably.
Exactly. And that's where Heron comes in. This latest processor actually signals a shift in strategy for IBM.
Oh, how so?
Well, instead of just focusing on adding more qubits, they're now prioritizing error reduction. They've actually managed to achieve a threefold reduction in error rates with Heron compared to previous processors.
Threefold. Okay, that's significant.
It is. It's a big deal for building quantum computers that can actually be used for practical applications. It's like moving from look what we can do to look what we can use.
So, are we finally entering an era where we can actually start using quantum computers to solve real-world problems?
It's starting to feel that way, yeah. And what's even more exciting
Yeah.
is that they didn't abandon the pursuit of larger qubit counts at the same time.
Wait, are you talking about Condor, the thousand qubit one?
That's the one.
Okay, so tell me more about this Condor. What's so special about it?
Well, first of all, it's a beast. 11,121 qubits. The largest superconducting quantum processor ever built, to date anyway.
Wow, 1,000 qubits. I could barely wrap my head around
That's
that.
a lot of computational power. And it's not just about the size either. They've used this unique honeycomb design to increase qubit density.
Honeycomb, huh? Interesting.
Yeah, and they've got some really sophisticated wiring techniques going on within its cryostat. That's the super cooled environment those qubits need to function properly.
Okay, so a lot of fancy engineering went into this thing.
Oh yeah, it's a masterpiece.
But, like we were saying before, size isn't everything, right?
Huh.
What about the performance?
Right, it has to be able to actually do something useful with all those qubits.
Exactly. So what does the paper say about the performance of Condor?
Well, it gets pretty technical, but they cover things like dot coherence times, gate fidelity, error rates, you know, the real nitty-gritty.
Okay, I'm all for getting into the weeds, but maybe we could start with a bit of a high-level overview.
Sure, of course.
Like, for those of us who aren't quantum physicists, what are the key things to look for when we're talking about the performance of these quantum computers?
Okay, so one of the most important things is something called coherence time.
Coherence time.
Yeah. It's basically a measure of how long a qubit can maintain its quantum state before, you know, it gets messed up by noise from the environment.
So, like, the longer it can stay in that weird superposition state, the better.
Exactly. It's like a spinning top. The longer it can spin without wobbling, the better its coherence.
Okay, I can visualize that. So longer coherence times are a good thing. What kind of numbers are we talking about here for these IBM machines?
Well, for Condor, they're reporting coherence times of up to 400 microseconds.
400 microseconds. I mean, that doesn't sound like a lot of time.
It might not sound like much, but in the quantum world, it's actually pretty long. And these qubits can perform millions of operations within that time frame.
Okay, so it's all relative, I guess.
Exactly. And they've made significant improvements in coherence times compared to previous generations.
All right, that makes sense. What about those other metrics you mentioned? Gate fidelity and error rates.
Right, so gate fidelity is basically how accurately a quantum gate operation is performed.
And what are these gates exactly?
Think of them as the building blocks of quantum algorithms. They manipulate the qubits to perform computations.
Got it. So we want these gates to be as accurate as possible.
Absolutely. And the paper reports that they've achieved average single qubit gate fidelities exceeding 99.9% on their latest machines.
99.9%. So, like, only one error out of every 1,000 operations.
Yeah, pretty impressive, right?
That's pretty amazing considering how delicate this whole quantum technology is.
It is. And error rates, which are basically the flip side of fidelity, have also seen big improvements. They've got two qubit gate error rates down to less than 1%.
Less than 1%. Okay, so it sounds like they're making real progress in terms of reliability.
They are, and that's super important if we want to use these quantum computers for real-world applications.
Right, because if you're trying to simulate a complex molecule or something, you need to know the results you're getting are accurate.
Exactly. And the progress IBM is showing in these areas is really encouraging.
It's like they're moving from the realm of this is cool to this is actually useful.
I think that's a good way to put it. We're starting to see a shift from demonstrating the potential to demonstrating the practicality.
Okay, so let's talk about that practicality. I mean, are there real-world applications for these IBM quantum computers right now? Or is it all still just theoretical exploration?
You know, there are actually quite a few exciting applications being explored, even though, yes, we are still in the early stages.
Okay, like what? Give me some examples.
Well, one area that's getting a lot of attention is materials discovery.
Materials discovery. I can see how quantum computers could be helpful there. Designing new materials at the atomic level seems like something they'd be good at.
Right. It's a perfect match for a technology that leverages the power of quantum mechanics.
So they can simulate how different atoms interact and behave, and then use that information to create new materials with specific properties.
Precisely. They can simulate properties like conductivity, strength, reactivity, things that are really hard to predict with classical computers.
So instead of just trial and error in the lab, they can use quantum simulations to design materials with exactly the properties they want.
That's the idea. It could revolutionize fields like manufacturing and energy production.
That's huge. Are there any actual companies or research groups doing this kind of materials science research with IBM's quantum computers?
Yeah, actually quite a few. ExxonMobil, for example, is using IBM's quantum computers to explore new ways to capture and store carbon dioxide.
That's pretty cool.
Right. It's a big challenge in addressing climate change.
Absolutely. So they're using quantum computers to help fight climate change.
Exactly. And they're also using them to simulate the behavior of catalysts used in oil refining.
Okay, so making those processes more efficient.
Yep, potentially leading to significant improvements in efficiency and sustainability.
That's great. It's nice to see these real-world applications starting to emerge. Are there other areas where IBM's quantum computers are making an impact?
Definitely. Drug discovery is another big one.
Drug discovery. Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, developing new drugs is such a complex and time-consuming process.
It is. It can take over a decade, sometimes billions of dollars, to bring a new drug to market.
And a lot of that is spent on research and development, right?
Right. Trying to understand how different molecules interact with the human body.
I guess that's where quantum computers could come in handy.
Exactly. They could help us simulate those molecular interactions much more accurately.
And potentially speed up the whole drug discovery process.
That's the hope. Researchers are already using IBM's quantum computers to simulate the behavior of drug molecules, looking at things like how to design drugs that can bind to specific proteins involved in diseases like cancer.
Oh, wow. That's incredible.
It's pretty amazing, right? It could lead to more effective, more targeted therapies.
This is starting to sound like science fiction.
I know. It's wild. Uh-huh. And it's not just material science and drug discovery. We're also seeing applications pop up in finance, logistics, artificial intelligence.
Whoa. Okay, hold on. Quantum computers and finance. That sounds interesting.
Yeah. Imagine using quantum algorithms to develop more sophisticated risk management models or optimize investment strategies.
Okay, that's next level.
It is.
Yeah.
And in logistics, you could use them to optimize delivery routes, manage inventory more efficiently, maybe even design smarter traffic flow systems.
So quantum computers could help us get our packages faster.
Potentially, yeah.
And what about AI? I've heard a lot about quantum machine learning. Is that something IBM is looking into?
Oh, absolutely. Quantum machine learning is a really hot area right now, and IBM is at the forefront.
So we could see even more powerful AI systems emerging, powered by quantum computers.
It's definitely a possibility.
That's exciting. And maybe a little scary.
It is a powerful combination. But like with any new technology, it's important to use it responsibly and ethically.
Yeah, for sure. It sounds like this technology could really reshape many aspects of our lives.
It could, and that's why it's so important to think carefully about its implications.
Right, so we've talked about the hardware, the performance, the applications, but this paper also dives into IBM's mind for the future of quantum computing. What's their big picture plan?
Well, one of the key things they talk about is this idea of quantum-centric supercomputing.
Quantum-centric supercomputing. Sounds pretty futuristic.
It does, doesn't it? It is a pretty bold vision.
So what exactly does that mean? Quantum-centric supercomputing.
Well, it's kind of a new way of thinking about computing. Instead of seeing quantum computers as replacements for our classical computers, it's more about seeing them as complements.
So working together.
Exactly. It's about creating a hybrid system. The classical computer would handle the tasks it's good at, like data pre-processing and post-processing. And the quantum computer would focus on the really tough stuff, you know, the complex quantum algorithms that would take a classical computer forever to solve.
Okay, so it's like a tag team effort.
Yeah, kinda. Each one playing to its strengths.
I like that. But I imagine there were some pretty big hurdles to overcome to make this quantum-centric supercomputing thing a reality.
Oh, yeah. There are definitely challenges.
Like what?
Well, one of the big ones is integration. Figuring out how to seamlessly connect these classical and quantum systems. They operate on such different principles. Ensuring smooth communication and data transfer between them is going to be key.
Right, like building a bridge between two different worlds.
Exactly. And then there's the whole issue of error correction, which we talked about earlier. Quantum computers are incredibly sensitive to noise, remember?
Yeah, that spinning top analogy.
Right. So to make this quantum-centric supercomputing vision work, we need really robust error correction methods. We need to ensure that these hybrid systems are reliable and accurate.
So lots of work to be done.
Mm-hmm.
What are some of the things IBM is doing to address these challenges? What's their plan?
Well, the paper outlines a few key areas of focus. On the hardware side, they're pushing the boundaries of qubit coherence times even further, exploring new materials, new fabrication techniques, all with the goal of improving stability and reducing errors.
So back to the lab for the quantum engineers.
Pretty much. But it's not just about the hardware. They're also putting a lot of effort into developing the software ecosystem, making these systems more accessible and user-friendly.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't matter how amazing the hardware is if nobody knows how to use it.
Exactly. And their Qiskit software development kit is a big part of that. It's open source, so anyone can use it. They're constantly adding new features, new tools to help developers design and run even more complex quantum algorithms.
So it's really a two-pronged approach, improving the hardware and the software in parallel.
Exactly. And it's not just about the technology itself either.
Oh, right. There are the bigger implications for society to consider.
Exactly. As this technology gets more powerful, we need to think about the ethical and societal impacts. Things like data privacy, security, the potential impact on the job market. It's important to have these conversations.
It's like we're on the verge of a new era, and we need to make sure we navigate it responsibly.
I agree. And I think IBM's commitment to open source development with Qiskit is a good sign. By making this technology accessible to a wide community, they're promoting transparency, collaboration, and hopefully responsible innovation.
Yeah, that's a good point. Well, this has been a fascinating deep dive into the world of IBM quantum computers. We've covered a lot of ground.
We have. From their early 5-qubit processor to their vision for quantum-centric supercomputing?
It's incredible how far they've come in such a short time.
It is. And who knows what breakthroughs are just around the corner? The future of quantum computing is looking pretty exciting.
It really is. Thanks for joining us on this journey, and we hope you learn something new along the way.
Until next time.